Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time.
Welcome to the show. We have a special guest, one I'm extremely excited about. He was the starting two guard for the Hornets when I first fell in love with the team. We're joined by David Wesley, who's played for 7 full seasons. Many of you may not know this, but he is actually owns lots of records on the Hornets career charts. He is 4th in games played, 2nd in minutes, 4th in field goals made, 2nd in three-pointers, 5th in free throws, 4th in assists, 3rd in steals. I probably shouldn't mention this. He's 2nd in turnovers as well.
Sweet.
So thanks for coming on, David.
Thank you. I mean, you just told me a bunch of stuff I didn't know.
I knew you had a major impact on the team, and I enjoyed watching you all those years. But wow, you hold a lot of records for the team.
Yeah, that's fun facts right there. I didn't know all that.
So you're coming on board with the Hornets this year, joining Joel Myers in a new broadcast team.
Yes.
And we wanted to get some ideas of what kind of coverage we should be expecting for this upcoming season and what kind of challenges you see, because you haven't done play-by-play and color commentary before, correct?
I've 1 year when I was with the Hornets, I was hurt and did it for a game, just without the bells and whistles, of course. And, you know, then I did some post-game, pre-game, halftime stuff for the Rockets for, I don't know, a couple of months. So I don't have a ton of experience. I would call me no experience, but, you know, to the broadcast is 14 years of experience in the NBA, 2 years of coaching in the D-League, and just a professional view of what you're actually seeing on the floor, the why, how did that happen, why are they making a 10-0 run, digging a little bit deeper than just what you see. And for those fans that don't know basketball, maybe explain some things that they don't know, some of the rule changes, some of the things that they're trying to enforce this year. And, just be the professional on the go. The things that I will have to get used to are I'm the earpiece thing. I did a show today on NBA TV with Steve Smith and Rick. And, you know, I have this guy talking in my ear, and that's going to take some getting used to. Following the conversation that Joel's giving me back and forth, or answering a question that he's asked, and then the producer talking in my ear, telling me we're going to commercial, tie it up, wrap it up. You know, I'm having to hear this, answer a question. I think that'll be the most difficult, and knowing when to talk, of course.
Right.
So, David, something that I find interesting about the broadcast game is how much it's shifted in the last 15 or 20 years. I mean, 20 years ago, we didn't have something like NBA League Pass. If you were a local color commentator, you were usually speaking to the fans of that specific team and sometimes that alone. Now we have League Pass. Fans are checking in or streaming games live all over the country, checking out different teams. And as I watch, I see some ex-players who are color commentators who are completely objective. And then others who I won't mention any names, like Sean Elliott, who are a little more biased to the home team, which I'm sure the home team fans love, but it's honestly a little sickening when I tune in to watch a Hornets Spurs game. So where do you think you're going to fall, you know, in there of just being completely objective and honestly, you know, maybe chiding the refs a little bit in the Hornets' direction?
Well, I think that's exactly where I want to be. I want to be objective, but I am employed by the Hornets. I am going to be rooting for the Hornets. I'm going to want them to win against every team in the league. I'm not going to be thinking, oh, well, I'm from Texas, so I want Houston to win, or I played for the Celtics and I like them better. I am going to give you as much information, as much inside information about the Hornets. I'm going to disagree with every call against the Hornets unless it's just obvious. I'm not going to root for them, and I'm not going to cheer on the microphone, but I'm definitely going to be in their corner and hopefully spin them in the best light, even on days when they don't have it. But I will be objective, and, you know, if they don't have it, I'm not going to sit there and say, oh, you know, the refs are killing them. No, they just don't have it tonight. So I hope that I can bring that. You know, I don't want to use we and us, but in my head I'll be thinking we and us.
Mm-hmm. So earlier you mentioned you did the NBA TV. I'm assuming that's for the real training camp thing that they did today.
Yes.
So you've been around the Hornets for a long time. You've been through the league 14 years. You've now had 2 years as the assistant coach with the Legends, correct, in the D-League?
That is correct.
So I have one, like, great question that I've always wanted a player to try, hopefully answer me honestly on, because I've always wondered about this. Whenever they bring in, like, a older guy to a team, the team always spins it as, we're bringing in a veteran presence who will come in and mentor our young guys and teach them how to play the right way. But these older guys generally have been pretty good for a while, and they probably want to play a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, do they usually come in and actually mentor the younger players and help them take their jobs? Or is that really more of like a coaching thing, and it's the coaches that end up mentoring the players? Or is it really up to them to kind of do it themselves?
It's a collective effort, but, you know, let's say, you know, in my 11th season, they bring in this young guy. It's hard not to. If you really love the team and you really, you know, sometimes you develop really good friendships, and any player worth anything that's been in the league a long time, that doesn't take a young player to the side and let him know the ins and outs of the game, how to be a professional, how to be on time, how to come to work every day, you know, all those things that make you a good pro, that'll take you from being maybe an average guy to a 10-year career, is not worth much. And without even knowing it, sometimes you do it because you're just telling the guy, hey, you know, you don't do that, but you're really kind of mentoring. And I was saying today on NBA TV I was telling a group I was talking to this morning that, you know, Eric Williams calls me his vet. J.R. Smith, same thing. You know, they talk about me because J.R. Smith was playing my position.
Right.
I still wanted the guy to succeed, and I wanted him to have a good career, and I rooted for him. And I didn't, you know, when he was in the game, I wasn't sitting on the sideline thinking, oh, man, this guy. I wanted him to play well, because if he's playing well, we're winning, or we're having a chance to win, and I can get rest and all those kind of things. So, you know, I hope the guys like Roger Mason and Hakeem Warwick, I hope that they're, you know, letting the guys know how to take care of their bodies, how to eat right. And some of that stuff is just in airplane talk. You know, you're sitting on the airplane, yeah, what did you eat? Or, hey, I don't eat that because you're not really doing it because you're considering yourself a mentor, but it's just sharing information of, you know, I've talked to this guy who's talked to them, and this is the information I have, and I want to share it with you.
So coming off that, if you could put your mentor hat back on, I mean, when you were at Baylor, in your final year, you put up over 21 points a game. You were more of a scoring guard, even though I believe you did leave the team in assists. But, I mean, you were putting up 21 points a game. We have a guy coming in this year in Austin Rivers who, like you, they're hoping to help him make the transition to point guard, even though he might be a little bit more of a natural scorer. If you could talk to Austin about that transition, what would be some of the tips that you would give him to make that transition, you know, from a scorer to somebody who's more of a distributor at this level?
I would tell him, one, to watch other really good point guards, and not so that he can imitate, because, you know, like you said, I played the point guard position in college. My senior year, the two guard got hurt. We brought in a freshman point guard. I moved to the two guard spot, you know, most of the time. And even when he came back, when he came out of the game, I would move over to the two. The freshman point guard would come in and play. When I got to the NBA, you know, that was a big knock. You know, I wasn't a true point guard. And I played behind one of the really, really good point guards in Kenny Anderson, New York great high school point guard. And I watch him. And even though I knew I couldn't see what he sees, I mean, he would throw passes that I would go back and watch and say, that's not open. But it was on the money, and it was a dunk. And I'm saying, I wouldn't throw that in 100 tries. But, you know, he saw those things, and he did those things. But managing the game, you know, going to your pick and roll, how does he come off a pick and roll? What is he looking for? What passes he's making? And just really get used to doing that. It's a timing. It's a change of pace. And Coach Monty Williams today was talking to the guys about, you know, when you're young and you get in the league, you're thinking, I got to run 90 miles an hour, but it's not, it's 60 miles an hour to 80 miles an hour, and then back to 50, and then off to 90. You got to be able to change the pace, change the direction, set guys up, know how to lean on guys. Those things, Coach Monty, because he's been there, will teach them. Hopefully Roger and Akeem, they've all had to do those things. So they will teach them, but those are the things that a young guard, point guard, would have to learn, is and know every position. You know, a lot of times when you're just a shooting guard or big, you tend to know, okay, this is where I do this, and that's it. As a point guard, I knew all five positions, and I could run them all. And I could do it before our first game. I always knew where people were supposed to be. And that's a part of being a point guard, knowing what your coach wants. Knowing how to run the team, you know, time, score, and all that kind of stuff, situation, when to take shots, when to make plays for yourself. Hey, you know what? Anthony Davis hasn't got a shot yet. I need to get him involved. He's not running. I need to find out how I can get him going.
Mm-hmm. So you bring up Anthony Davis. And there is a lot of talk about Anthony and his immense potential, but he is clearly an interior presence, someone who's going to defend the paint, defend the rim for you. The question is do you think that in today's NBA, which seems to be moving towards faster, quicker players than many of the hulking centers of the of like the 90s and the 80s,
mm-hmm.
do you think that he can play the center spot? The five and for against most teams. I mean, I know like Bynum or Howard would give him trouble.
Well, I think he's going to have trouble with some of the bigger, you know, like a Bynum. This it's going to be double teams and ways to get him help. He's not a big, you know, in weight. He's not big in weight. He is long, and he's going to make it difficult. But I look at him more like a Tim Duncan. I look at him more like a David Robinson, even, because, you know, those guys, they were slim build, but they were long, and they were more like fours. They were fast fours. And I think he's more Kevin Garnett, you know. They try to play him at center sometimes, but he just, you know, then they send help because he can't – I mean, that's not his true position. He's a four. And so I think he'll be like that, and I think his potential – is enormous. It's just, you know, every player, you know, you think back to players that come out and they're expected to be good and they have great potential and they don't ever pan out. How much does he want to work? How much time? How fast does he want to learn? How much does he want to learn? How much does he want to listen to the guys who've been there before, who've done it before, his coaches, older players? How much does he want to watch and learn from other guys how they're doing it? And then put the time in, and then just use his natural ability to do the rest.
Yeah, you probably don't know this, but Michael's probably extremely gleeful at the moment because he keeps trying to make the comparison of Anthony Davis to David Robinson.
And,
you see?
it's the one that fits the most from me, and actually, just based on college stats, the one that fits is Ralph Sampson. Sampson was bigger, about 4 inches taller, but that same type of guy and the type of play. And off your point, the Celtics were the most successful last year when they put Garnett at five. So I don't know. I think that's the way that the NBA is moving. So we'll see. But what I've always wanted to ask you, I'll never forget, there was an article. It was, gosh, it had to be 98 or 99, but essentially, it was that last year, maybe a little later than that then, but the last year that you were leaving Charlotte and we knew that the Hornets were coming to New Orleans and, you know, essentially the crowds that you were drawing in Charlotte sometimes were 1,000 to 2,000 people. Mm-hmm. I remember you said there was one time you were bringing the ball up the court. And do you remember what the fans yelled out that made you stop and call a timeout? This is years ago.
Wow.
you were bringing the ball up the court, and there couldn't have been more than a couple hundred people in the stands, and somebody yelled out, "We got next." And you said in the interview that you had to pick the ball up and call a timeout because, you know, you were laughing too hard. But I guess what it brought me to, and the point of that article was that, you know, you were having some success that year, but you were saying how difficult it was to play in an arena where you didn't, you know, have the crowd support and, you know, a full building just, you know, has a tangible effect on players. And last year, somewhat understandably, with fans being upset about the lockout and Chris Paul leaving, New Orleans attendance dropped a little bit. But this year, ticket sales are through the roof. People are excited about Anthony Davis. What kind of tangible effect does that have on players when you've got a packed house and you've got fans really into it every night versus, you know, a half empty arena?
It's huge. It's something that you really, I don't know if you could put it into words, but our arena in Charlotte got that way. Atlanta got that way to where, even though Atlanta was bad, it was hard to go in there and beat them because there was just no atmosphere. And, you know, some nights when you're on a back-to-back or 4 and 5 nights, the stir of the crowd, the people walking in the building, people yelling at you, you know, even if you're on the road, people, you know, cheering against you, that stuff fuels you and gives you that little extra to get you through that night and get you into the game, you know, more than you already are. I go back to when the Hornets moved to Oklahoma City, the first thing I said about the fans in Oklahoma City was it was a college atmosphere again. People were cheering when there wasn't anything to cheer about. They were just loud for no reason. And when it came down the stretch of a game, the building was rocking because they were more like this silly, young, 21-year-old college fan than the cool, grown-up, mature fan that sometimes you get in NBA arenas that, you know, I'm not really going to clap. I'm not really going to stand up. Actually, the people in front of me need to sit down because I want to watch the game. I don't want to cheer. And, and that's the kind of atmosphere that all players like. They like the Hornets have, what are they called? The crazies or the...
Yeah.
The
zanies, yeah.
The B-Zanies.
That's awesome. See, that's college. That's the college. That's the stuff that gets you going. And you see them every game, and you're loving them, and you look for them. You get to know those fans. You start recognizing, hey, there's my – yeah, hey, all right, yeah. And that's fun. That makes basketball fun. And when you know, you're struggling or it's a bad – you know, it's a long week or whatever – those are the kind of things that kind of make it a little bit easier, a little bit better. I know people probably think, oh, you know, you're an NBA player and you make millions of dollars. What is your, you know, I don't care how much money you make. You can make $1 billion. If you play 82 games, you're not going to play 82 games at the same level 82 nights. So that night that you're maybe at 90%, they'll get you to 95%.
So I have a question for you, so that whenever we next get to talk to Monty Williams, mm-hmm. and we don't like the rotations he's using, I can say something like, well, David Wesley said you should do this. So I'm setting you up to be against your coach right off the bat.
Okay.
All right. So what right now, just with what you know of this team, what would be your starting five you throw out on the first day of the year, assuming perfect health, everybody's in great shape and ready to go?
Well, that's a good question. I'm gonna go with. I'm trying to think of this in my head as I go, because. The three spot is a huge problem. There's a lot of twos, which is a huge problem. He has guys and he has competition in practice, but Grievous may get to start at the one. Gordon may get to start at the two, or I would expect him to get to start at the two.
Right.
Gosh, that three spot, Anthony Davis, and man, I don't know. This is and I've been thinking about it all day, and then even if after I saw practice, I'm sitting there saying, I don't know. I don't know who's going to start on this team, because and you know, it's a good problem to have in a sense that there's great competition at most positions. But I don't know. I don't know who's going to start.
So we got three starters in Gordon, Grievous, Vasquez, and Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
And then you'll have to figure out over the course of training camp who you're going to fill in. So we'll have to ask you this question later.
Yeah. Come back to me. Come back to me later.
Because right now all I can do is go to Monty and say and challenge him that he's not playing Anthony Davis enough. And that's not, we got to get more than that.
Yeah. That's probably not. That's probably not a good. That's not enough. That's not enough.
Yeah.
You want more. You want more ammunition that I said something
right.
Vicious. Maybe Aminu at the three.
Okay. And do you think Lopez or Anderson starts up front with Davis? We have the same problem figuring this out ourselves.
Lopez. I'm going with Lopez because I think he's more of an inside presence. I think he'll be more, you know, the pick and roll kind of guy. And if he's playing with Anthony Davis, he's going to be a little bit more perimeter than that. But if you have Anthony Davis in the game, and I'm sure they're going to play together. But if you have the other two in the game together, you know, he's going to be he's more of a range shooter. He said he's working on his back to the basket stuff, Anderson.
Really?
So, yeah. But I still think he'll be more of a pick and pop guy than a pick and roll guy. And you got enough shooters out there with enough perimeter contribution with all the other guys.
All right, so I got one more hard question for you then.
Okay.
So Eric Gordon is struggling with this knee issue, so they're going to Mexico for this game, and Monty has to pick a starting shooting guard. And he's got Grievous Vasquez at point.
Right.
So basically his choices at this point are Henry, who is still coming off of an injury.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, he's got Austin Rivers and Roger Mason, the veteran guy who's been around the block, done it all, Roger Mason, and Austin Rivers, who's a rookie. So this is preseason.
Right.
Do you throw Rivers to the Wolves and see what happens? Or do you let Mason start and try to, you know, put Rivers in there slowly and figure it out?
I would. We're talking game one, preseason.
Yeah.
I would put Mason out there, let him get it going, let him, you know, kind of sit and watch, let Austin sit and watch, kind of get a feel, and then go. I would definitely start him one or two games, maybe even three games in the preseason, just so you can get a different look on, you know, is he a better starter? I mean, because we all know that the league is full of guys that are better six men than they are starters. And they relish that position. But I'd say for now, I mean, he's a rookie. There is no hurry. You have guys out there that can show him. You know, guys, is Eric's fourth year? Fifth year. Fourth or fifth year?
It's his fifth year, yeah.
Yeah. You know, so there's experience there. You don't have to throw him to the Wolves. Roger Mason, eighth or ninth year?
Yeah. He's the old guy.
He is the old guy. He's 32. He's the oldest guy on the team. Is that crazy?
Right. And then the next closest is, I think.
Yes. And he's almost 30. And then I think the next to him is 26 and then 23 and under. Eight guys. That's insane. That's crazy. You know, it's going to be tough for them night to night to be consistent because these guys aren't used to playing game after game, jump on a plane, go play again, jump on a plane, go play again, jump on a plane, be in another city, wait 2 days, play again, come home, play that night. I mean, it's, you know, and then get up every single time and be ready to, you know, ready to play that team's been sitting there waiting on you. It's tough. It's tough. And being young, if they're not getting this rest, not getting their proper eating, proper liquids, you're not going to feel so great when you go out there.
Well, luckily, most of the Hornets players aren't old enough to drink, so we won't have to worry about hangovers on game day.
No hangovers.
Yes, I'm sure in New Orleans, if you're underage, you can't get any alcohol.
Oh, my goodness. You can walk around with it in your hand, which is crazy.
Yeah.
That's still the craziest thing in America. That you can walk around the streets with alcohol in your hand, that you can drive up and buy alcohol. That's crazy.
Yep.
What New point. Orleans would say that every other city is crazy that you can't. So David, I guess the last question I have, and a lot of people have been asking, I mean, obviously we have game day with the Hornets and everybody looks forward to that, but what kind of, you know, other features or programming do you plan on being a part of, I mean, do you plan on anything where you're going over X's and O's with Monty's or with Monty or anything, you know, to do with the city? What other additional programming other than just game day can we look forward to?
Well, that's something that we just had a meeting about, you know, going over, hey, do we want to do this? Do we want to do that? And I'm not sure. We sat down as the analyst, play-by-play guy, radio play-by-play, an analyst, all the, you know, all the producers and everything, Fox guys, we all sat down and we, you know, kind of went over that. I mean, we went through stuff I didn't even know what they were talking about. We need a cat cable and a landline. I mean, I'm just, what are y'all even talking about? And full conversation. So, I'm not sure, you know, my thing right now, because I'm so new and I'm just, my eyes and ears are wide open. I'm ready to learn. I'm ready to take it all in. And when they ask me to do something, whether I know how to do it or not, or whether I'm sure about it, I want to jump in there and do it. They had me talking to the ticket sales this morning, and I'm thinking, okay, one, why me? Two, what am I going to say? Is this a rah-rah speech? You know, these guys have been doing it for years, and they don't need the rah-rah, or, you know, and then I get there, and the guy goes, you know, this is real light, you know, give them your spiel and, you know, open it up to questions. And it really turned out great. You know, it was a little, you know, hey, be professional without yelling and screaming. And it was, you know, good information that I got to share, a little insight about, you know, the guys, because I just seen them. And it was fun. But, you know, going into it, I'm sitting there thinking, oh, man, what am I gonna say to these guys? What am I going to say? And it worked out great.
Well, I mean, what, I guess then, if you were to pitch something, what do you think, would you say is the number one thing that you, you know, maybe fans are misinformed about, or they just don't understand about, you know, whether it's players, the team, the camaraderie? I mean, what's the number one thing that you really wish, you know, fans were more educated about? And obviously they aren't, because they don't have certain access.
Well, you know, I think it would be fun to come up with that kind of thing. You know, maybe a sit down where you ask, or, you know, fans are able to email in what they don't know. You know, like, you know, I just saw that thing on 30 for 30, you know, broke. Everybody said that Antoine lost all his money gambling. Well, if you listen to him, he explained that he didn't lose at gambling. He made bad investments. And I think, you know, when fans, you know, how do you blow $10 million? Well,
right.
It's quite easy if you're not smart. You know, and you're saying, there's no way I'd ever spend. Well, okay, in the defense of all the people that have ever gone broke spending X amount of dollars, yes, they were very, very careless and somewhat stupid with their money. But everybody wants to do something else. You guys may have had dreams to do something, buy your own place. Everybody wants to be their own boss. So you know what? Let's go out and buy a nightclub. Let's go out and start a clothing line. But you're not a businessman. See, right. I think where athletes mess up is they don't, and Antoine said it, be done playing. Go to school. Learn what you need to learn. Like the everyday businessman, learn what you need to learn, and then go be there. Watch your money. Watch how things are run. Don't just throw your money at it. And that's the biggest problem all of us athletes have. Throw your money at it and hope it's a gold mine, and it never is. Then
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I find it to be so hypocritical, because you're saying this of how people, you know, basically get on players with losing their money. But I remember, and this happened during your playing days, where Vince Carter either missed or was going to miss a game because he was getting his degree, and people just went crazy about that. You know, here's somebody who's trying to better himself, get his degree, get his education so he could do something beyond basketball, and then we, we want to go back and pigeon all these guys as basketball players again when they try to better themselves.
Right. Well, you know, that's fans for you. I mean, think about LeBron's career. Shoot it, don't shoot it. I mean, he plays the game absolutely the way it's supposed to be played. He passes the ball when he's guarded. They don't want that. But they complain about the guy who shoots up all the ball. They complain about Kobe because he shoots all the time. He's a gunner.
Yep.
LeBron plays it the right way. He's not winning. He's not selfish enough. Fans are fans. You know, they're great. You know, they're going to make the conversation go on and on and on. Should you shoot it? Should you not shoot it? Should you do it? But getting back to, you know, the guys that are, going back to school and all that. So and are losing their money, you know, they really should go back to school, then figure out and watch the money and then do it that way. And then they'll have a chance to be successful. Now, of course, when you're a player, you have the options to do more. So you do more. You buy more. You have more. That's not always a good thing, especially if you're trying to keep up with the guy that's making $100 million. Getting back to your question, I would like something like that, like a segment where the fans could email, text, tweet, whatever, questions in, and, you know, maybe even get a fan on and be able to talk to them somehow. And, you know, kind of like you guys, you know, we sit and just talk about, you know, me and Joel just sit around and talk about, you know, our take on these questions, these issues in the league, around the league, on the team, or whatever.
Yeah, I know people want that. In this day and age, it's easier than ever, but then there's also more with access. And I guess I lied. I do have one question. If you had advice for us, so Ryan and I, we have seven writers on the site. We attend the games. We cover anything and everything to do with the Hornets. Of course, there's going to be players who have bad games, who have bad seasons. From a player's perspective, what's inbounds and out of bounds for somebody like us who's covering? I mean, obviously, we have to be able to say when you're playing poorly, but I guess when you were a player, what to you was fair as far as any form of criticism from a writer, and what to you, was out of bounds?
I think for me, everything was typically in bounds because I didn't read it. I was one of those guys that if I played a good game, I didn't read the paper the next day. If I played a bad game, I didn't read the paper the next day. I wasn't looking on ESPN for my play of the day. Now, most of the articles that I got, somebody gave them to me, and I very seldom read them. I would take them, and I have them. They're in books, but I very seldom actually read them, unless they were about, hey, you went to the school, or I would read an interview I did. I would read those because I wanted to hear how I talk and how I come across. But as far as, you know, trying to find that, you know, oh, man, they're talking about me. And I think that's where LeBron really messes up, is he reads all that. And that stuff starts getting in your head. Do I shoot? Do I not shoot? This fan said shoot. I mean, this commentator said shoot. This writer said don't. You can't do that. But there were times when I got wind of a writer that was killing me. But it wasn't about my play. It was his personal opinion. And it irritated me. I didn't talk to him anymore. So, and that was the only writer in 14 years that I absolutely would not. He was in the little, you know, after a game we played, he was in the, you know, in the group. And I told everybody, I'm not talking until he leaves.
Wow.
And you would, and all the rest of the reporters looked at him like, you're leaving, right? And he left. But his was unfair. I mean, he was just absolutely, I don't like him. He'll never be any good. I mean, just killing me. And just because he liked another player better.
Mm.
Right.
Okay. I mean, that's fine. And I mean, I don't mind you liking him, but you don't have to kill me in the process.
And to your point, once LeBron put the articles down and picked up the Hunger Games or whatever he was reading during the finals,
exactly,
he became the player that everybody wanted to be. Well, David, I just first want to say, thanks so much for coming on. I mean, I've followed the Hornets since, 92, 93. You know, you were always just such a steady force, such a great player. Now to have you back, I think the fans are really going to benefit. I'm looking forward to the broadcast myself, and just want to thank you for taking the time to come on.
Yeah. I'll come on anytime. I enjoyed talking to you guys, and I am looking forward to getting started.
Yeah, and I'm rooting for you. I got to say, one of my favorite subplots of every training camp when I was following them and you were the starting two guard was they always said they were going to bring in some guard to challenge you for the starting role on the team.
Yeah.
And you never lost it. So.
Well, and I knew that. You know, I had somebody ask me today, you know, they said, oh, you know, one stretch you went, you know, 3 or 4 years without missing a game, said, how hard is that? I said, it's incredibly hard. He said, well, did you practice? I said, I was on the floor every time I was supposed to be on the floor because that's how I got there. I got there because guys got hurt. And every player has gone through, I got hurt, guy comes in, shines, and then they don't get their starting position back or they're traded or moved or whatever. And I said, I never want that to happen to me. So it always kept me hungry and ready to play. Wheel me out there.
Yep.
I'm ready, coach. I know my leg is broke. Put me in.
Yeah, highly drafted number 3 overall pick, and Baron Davis gets no starts his rookie year because David Wesley was not going to come out for a game and let the youngster try to eat his spot.
And you know what? And that would have been the ideal. If I missed 10 games his rookie year, I'm not a point guard that year. And I knew that. And the end of that story, that next year, Paul Silas comes up to me and says, you know the young boys will play, right? I said, yeah, I know you don't play. He said, but I'm going to try you at the 2. How do you feel about that? I said, coach, just put me on the floor. I'll make it work. And that's when I started playing the 2-guard position for the rest of my career.
Love it.
Yeah. All right, so thanks very much for coming on, and I wish you the best of luck in your new endeavors as the rookie color commentary guy.
The rookie, yes indeed. Well, I appreciate you guys, and have a good evening.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, David.
Yeah.